The views and opinions expressed on America's Workforce Union podcast and its digital media channels are solely those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent the views and opinions of the producers or sponsors.
Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
50 years in the making, finally, new safety rules to protect miners from silica dust. What six governors in the South are saying about the union vote at Volkswagen in Tennessee this week. And today on the show, it's all about heat exposure, what one city is doing and how one state is ignoring worker safety. Welcome to the Thursday, April 18th edition of America's Workforce, where we're available on at least five platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Pandora. We have two guests on the show today, and we are going to zero in on the importance of worker safety, especially dealing with what is expected to be a very hot summer. Our first guest, Caitlin Parody. She is a staffer with the National Council for Occupational Safety and Health, better known as National COSH. NationalCosh.org is their website. And this is an organization which we have featured on the show many, many times. They pretty much link the efforts of local worker health and safety coalitions in communities all around the country. And they advocate for the elimination of preventable hazards, keyword preventable hazards in the workplace. And what we're going to talk about is an ordinance that was recently passed in Phoenix, Arizona, which will protect workers for City of Phoenix contractors from the dangers of extreme heat. Now, Phoenix experienced a record-breaking 31 straight days with temperatures over 110 degrees last year. And extreme heat is extremely dangerous. Let's be honest about that. According to the health department in Maricopa County, there were 340 heat-related deaths in the city in 2023 among 645 fatalities countywide. Three out of four heat-related deaths took place outdoors, and the county does not provide any data about how many fatalities were work-related. They got to work on that one, no doubt about that. Well, that new ordinance was passed unanimously, which is a great sign by the city council, and this did not come easily. Caitlin's going to talk about that. This campaign included members of SEIU and Unite Here Local 11 and other labor and community organizations, and it will apply to outdoor workers for city contractors and their subcontractors who provide construction, engineering, airport, and other services to the city. And that includes the Sky Harbor Airport. So this is a step in the right direction. It's not perfect. Nothing ever is. But the good news is it's going to protect a whole lot of workers. And sadly, and Kate's going to talk about this, it's pretty well documented that the dangers of extreme heat fall mostly severely on black, brown, and low-income workers. And that's not just in Phoenix. That's everywhere. Now, they're moving in the right direction. Florida is not. Ron DeSantis, the governor who tried to be president, signed a bill, this happened last week, barring Florida localities from requiring employers to provide outdoor workers with access to water, to rest, and shade. Dave Jamieson, who is a wonderful reporter, he's the labor reporter for the Huffington Post, better known as the Huff Post, is going to talk about this as our second guest here on the show. And this is very controversial. It's known as the preemption law. It forbids cities and counties from pursuing their own ordinances on a particular subject. In this case, protections from extreme heat. This is pretty much modeled, and Dave is going to talk about this, It's pretty much modeled after what they did in Texas. And we had a really good conversation about that some months ago, because a couple of cities in Texas, San Antonio, for one, they try to help out workers and say, you know what, when it's really hot, and it gets pretty hot in Texas, you know, give them a break, 10 minutes. Well, they wanted a uniform policy. And I remember Len Aguilar, Secretary Treasurer of the Texas AFL-CIO, saying, well, okay, well, you want a uniform policy, let's give everybody a break in all the cities of Texas. They didn't go down that road. No, they didn't. Instead, nobody gets a break. And you're going to see people die. In fact, a number of people who testified against this said, this will kill people. This will kill people. In fact, a farm worker in Miami-Dade County died last July during what would become the hottest month ever recorded. And you know that's going to happen again. There's more to this, too, and Dave is going to talk about it, and that involves a minimum wage. And a number of states are doing this because there's cities in various states. Ohio, for one, they wanted to raise the wage. This was some years ago in Cleveland. And they passed legislation and said, no, we're not going to do that. You're not allowed to do that unless the entire state does it. And that hasn't happened yet. So Dave Jamieson will be our second guest right here on America's Workforce. Now, a brief look into the world of labor. The segment brought to you by Boyd Watterson Asset Management. You can find more at BoydWatterson.com. The U.S. Department of Labor announced this week that its Mine Safety and Health Administration, better known as MSHA, has issued a final rule to better protect the nation's miners from health hazards associated with the exposure to silica, crystalline silica, also known as silica dust or quartz dust. The final rule, which will take effect June 17th, lowers the permissible exposure limit of silica to 50 micrograms per cubic meter of air for a full shift exposure, which is calculated as an 8-hour time-weighted average, an 8-hour day, in other words. If a miner's exposure exceeds the limit, the final rule requires mine operators to take immediate corrective actions to come into compliance. Now, Julie Sue, the acting labor secretary, was at the Labor Department for the announcement this week, which happened on Tuesday. She said it is unconscionable that our nation's miners have worked without adequate protection from silica dust, despite it being a known health hazard for decades. I mean, we're going back like 50 years here. Well, now, the Department of Labor has taken an important action to finally reduce miners' exposure to toxic silica dust and protect them from suffering from preventable diseases. Mining communities across the country should know that the Biden-Harris administration is determined to do what must be done to ensure that miners come home safe and healthy at the end of every day. That's Julie Sue speaking. In addition to reducing exposure limits, the final rule does the following. Number one, requiring mine operators to use engineering controls to prevent miners' overexposure to silica dust and use dust samplings and environmental evaluations to monitor those exposures. It also compels metal and non-metal mine operators to establish medical surveillance programs to provide periodic health examinations at no cost to the miners. By the way, I mean, this is how deadly this stuff is. Inhalation of crystalline silica, which is a carcinogen, can cause serious lung and other diseases like silicosis, lung cancer, progressive massive fibrosis, chronic bronchitis, as well as kidney disease. Exposure to mixed coal mine dust containing silica can lead to the development of black lung disease and progressive massive fibrosis. These diseases are irreversible and can be fatal. And again, they are preventable. There is some pushback on this. I got an email from our dear friend Virginia Fox at the Committee on Education and Workforce. This is the committee headed by Republicans. She says this will be a detriment to the mining industry. The feedback of stakeholders has largely been ignored in this process. MSHA failed to consider that many of the rules' requirements are completely unworkable in the field. There's some politicians that are on the side of workers, and there are some that are not. Voting began early yesterday morning for workers at Volkswagen's Chattanooga, Tennessee plant to decide whether or not they will be represented by the United Auto Workers. Now, those results are expected tomorrow night. And if the workers vote for the union, it will be a historic win for the UAW. No doubt about that. In fact, we got a comment here from Harley Shaken. He's very well respected. He's a professor at the University of California, Berkeley. He called this a defining moment for the UAW. A victory really sets a precedent and breaks the glass ceiling that you can't organize auto factories in the South. In a sign that the UAW has a strong chance of success after repeated attempts, a super majority of the workers at the plant signed on to petition the labor board for the union election. Well, you know, there's some people that are not too happy about this. Six Southern Republican governors from Alabama, Georgia, Mississippi, South Carolina, Tennessee, and Texas, well, they're all opposing the worker organizing efforts at plants located in their various states. And you'll recall Sean Fain said, you know what, there's 13 non-union plants, we're going after them. And the workers are saying, you know what, we're interested. In a letter, this is the letter from the governors. In the letter, they argue that workers electing to join unions to improve their wages and working conditions, quote, threaten our jobs and the values we live by. They claimed in their letter that every single time a foreign automaker plant has been unionized, not one of those plants remains in operation. Well, the same foreign automakers doing business in the southern U.S. operate plants that remain open, unionized, and profitable in Europe and elsewhere around the world. They didn't talk about that part. And the governors went on to say that unions are special interests while not referring to the foreign automakers as special interests. According to the UAW, by the way, a majority of Mercedes workers, this is in Vance, Alabama, have also signed union support cards to petition the NLRB for an election at that plant. Stephen Silva is an author on a number of labor articles, and Stephen said a combination of political circumstances, UAW President Sean Fain's leadership and company messaging have created a better environment for the UAW than in past organizing efforts. Silva said, this is by far the best chance for the UAW out of all of its drives at Chattanooga to come ahead. We'll find out. We'll find out late tomorrow night. But congratulations for what they're doing at the UAW. Get all the updates. A lot of good videos. They've really tricked up their website, uaw.org, to follow all the news and information there. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Caitlin Parody on behalf of the National Council of Occupational Safety and Health.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Are you an experienced mechanical insulator looking to take your career to the next level? Insulators Local 50 in Central Ohio has steady work for a number of years. Insulators Local 50 offers a total wage and benefits package that can't be beat. It's not just the competitive wages. Local 50 also provides medical, vision, and dental insurance with no paycheck deductions for you and your family. Don't miss out on the chance to secure your future. Join us at Insulators Local 50. Earn great pay and the best benefits. Visit insulators50.com/AWF50 to fill out the online form and a Local 50 representative will call to begin the process.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the International Brotherhood of Teamsters, where you could find more at teamster.org.
America's Workforce Radio is sponsored in part by the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 6, representing painters, glazers, drywall finishers, and sign and display industry workers. They remind you that belonging to a union is your right as an American.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the United Auto Workers. Find more at uaw.org.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at boydwatterson.com.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the United Steelworkers. You can find more at usw.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on X, formerly known as Twitter. That would be AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment is brought to you by Blue Cross and Blue Shield's National Labor Office. Blue Cross and Blue Shield companies formed out of a need to provide affordable health care to teachers, loggers, and miners. Well, in 1965, the Blues developed the National Labor Office to strengthen its commitment to organized labor. Today, Blue Cross and Blue Shield's National Labor Office remains focused on America's workers, advocating for affordable and equitable health care, partnering with strategic alliances to provide industry-leading products and services, and proudly serving more than 18 million unionized workers, retirees, and their families. Yes, working hard for America's working families, for the health of America. You can learn more by following them at Blue Labor on LinkedIn and X, formerly known as Twitter. Let's go to Phoenix, Arizona, and join yet another newcomer to America's Workforce. I love having more and more guests wanting to be on America's Workforce, and for very good reason. We tell the stories of workers and how workers are being treated. And in some parts of the country, they're not treated very well. Joining us on our live line today is Caitlin Parody, and she is with a wonderful organization which we have featured on the show many, many times, National COSH. National COSH links the efforts of local worker health and safety coalitions in communities all around the country, advocating for the elimination of preventable hazards in the workplace. Do check out their website, nationalcosh.org, and that's the National Council for Occupational Safety and Health. And today we're going to focus on what happened in the city of Phoenix, a new city ordinance that is going to help people exposed to extreme heat. So, Caitlin, with that being said, let me ask you, you're in Phoenix, Arizona. How hot is it in Phoenix, Arizona today?
That is an excellent question. It is 94 degrees. We are at the start of heat season.
Yep.
It's just going to get a lot hotter.
Yeah. What were some of the temperatures last year? Well over 100. Do you recall any record-breaking temperatures from last year?
You know, we had more than 30 days of over 110 degrees straight, which, as you can imagine, was just brutal for folks. And our nighttime temperatures were also record breaking, where you just really weren't dipping under 100, even when the sun went down.
And there's a lot of people working in that extreme heat. I want to talk about that. In fact, that's primarily why we have you on the show today. But first and foremost, since you're a new guest here on America's Workforce, I'd like to get a little into your background. I understand this is kind of interesting too, because you were raised in a mining and oil and gas community that was in Southwest Wyoming. Why don't we start right there, and maybe you can tell us how you found your way to National COSH. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's right. I was born and raised in Rock Springs, Wyoming, which is a mining town, as you hit on. You know, my father was actually a health and safety manager, management side at a mine. My mom's best friend, who we just lost last week, was crushed but survived a collapse in the late 1980s. So health and safety, you know, was really always in the background of my existence. But it took finding the COSH network in Boston, actually, for me to really get sort of politicized around labor issues. So National COSH is definitely a nice home base for me, and we're really excited to be bringing, COSH support to workers here in Arizona.
was reading earlier that you were the Associate Director of Justice at Work, which was based in Boston. Can you give us a little background on that?
Yeah, Justice at Work is a really beautiful organization. They're a law and organizing organization, so a legal nonprofit, but they really exist to support workers across Massachusetts, the sort of eastern Massachusetts robust immigrant worker center community with their organizing efforts.
I see.
So
okay.
That is really, you know, where I cut my teeth and learned so much about the struggles that immigrant workers in this country face, especially.
Well, let's talk about what happened here in your city of Phoenix, Arizona. And I know this was not easy. Maybe you can walk us through the process where a new city ordinance that has passed is a first step to protect workers for the city contractors. Again, now there's limitations on this. It would protect workers for the city of Phoenix contractors from the dangers of extreme heat. I understand you were a big part of this. Maybe you can tell us what this ordinance is all about, how you were able to accomplish it. Okay, can you do that?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, first and foremost, I think shout out to lots of workers in Phoenix, and particularly workers out at Sky Harbor Airport, who've been agitating around this issue of heat protection for a long time, for a lot of years. You know, we really got involved last summer when we were just in that incredible, incredible stretch of absolutely brutal heat. And workers who were being supported by SEIU reached out with really just so many stories of heat illness. You know, people being sick, throwing up, baggage handlers, cabin cleaners, you know, folks who also work inside and on the jet bridges, just pretty atrocious conditions without a lot of protections, no training. And those workers really, I think, galvanized a lot of energy here in Phoenix around the heat issue. They filed a complaint with our state OSHA plan, and they just have sort of continually kept pushing. And I think, you know, what they did built on what workers with Unite Here have been doing for several years, sort of created this opening to get this ordinance passed, which is, you know, really one of the first of its kind in the country, and really, you know, it's the city of Phoenix leveraging their contracts to say that, you know, workers, if you want to do business with the city of Phoenix as a contractor or as a subcontractor of a contractor, you have to provide workers with, you know, access to these simple life-saving things, shade, water, rest, training, acclimatization, and you have to have a written heat safety plan. So it's a big win because it is really, you know, the only, like, specific heat protection on the books here in Arizona. And it also there's another piece of it that really is going to change a lot of folks' lives out at the airport, which is that it requires that enclosed cab vehicles at the airport all have AC by May of 2025. And there's a long history at the airport of the companies really removing air conditioning from those trucks. You can imagine on the tarmac, you know, if it's 110 degrees somewhere else on the tarmac and inside an enclosed cab vehicle, it's really an oven. So that's a huge win. But it is just a first step, right? Because the estimate is that this covers about 10,000 workers. And we know it's not covering, you know, folks who are out there working as landscapers, as residential construction workers, you know, all across the city, working outside, you know, facing this deadly threat of heat every day with very few protections. So we're looking forward to keeping it going.
Caitlin, if you don't mind unwinding a little bit of this, and I think I heard this correctly, maybe you can tell me if I'm wrong. They removed air conditioning from some of the trucks in the airport. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's what our friends at Unite Here have sort of drawn attention to over the past few years. That's right. And, you know, the testimony that we heard from workers who are in those trucks, delivering food to planes, other things like that. The testimony that we heard at the council meeting where this was passed was really profound. You know, people said this will really change their lives because, you know, as conditions currently are, they folks go to work just really, you know, not sure how they're going to get through to the end of their shift.
Now, did they say why they removed the, I mean, that's not an easy thing. I mean, they usually come equipped with air conditioning. But they took it out, or was this a different component? That part I don't understand at all.
Yeah, my understanding, I believe, again, from our friends at Unite Here, is that this is just about sort of saving money on gas while idling. Which,
that's crazy. I mean, that's absolutely crazy. Yeah. You know, I remember talking to the Teamsters, you know, last year. They were preparing to go on strike, and some of those trucks were like 145, 150 degrees, and they had to work that through their collective bargaining. And I know Florida, of course, obviously being in the South, they were the last two to come on board on that. But that's absolutely ridiculous. Number one, you got to have air conditioning. And I see in the release, that's one of the things that they're required to provide: access to air conditioning in vehicles with enclosed cabs, training for outdoor workers on how to recognize and prevent heat injury and illness, and easy access to rest shade, potable water for workers in outdoor environments. I have to ask you, pushback. Contractors don't like being told what to do, many of them. Some are good, let's be honest. Some are, and there's a thing called responsible contracting. Any pushback on this, trying to get this through the city?
So, you know, it was really interesting. At the council meeting, not one contractor testified. And we had an overwhelming sort of turnout from workers. We flipped a vote that we had expected would be a no vote, I think just based on the sheer power of folks' testimony about their experiences working in the heat. So that was heartening. I, of course, don't anticipate that this will be a flawless rollout with no opposition. But I think that, you know, we're building a lot of power to really be able to defend any pushback that comes down the line. I think the other question is really going to be, what does this actually look like in practice? Because one thing that the city didn't do was expand sort of any monitoring capacity that they have on these contracts. This is not necessarily designed to be like a proactive, you know, inspection type basis. And so we know workers are going to need to be, you know, workers are always frontline monitors, right? They're always the ones who know what's going on, and they're going to need to be letting the contracts departments know. And, you know, that's a big lift. And we also didn't see any other specific sort of retaliation provisions built into this ordinance. So I think there's going to be a long way to go in terms of actually making sure that folks do put these protections in place and that they see real penalties when they don't.
Right. Well, as you pointed out, this is a first step, a critical first step. There's a lot more that needs to be done. Joining us on our live line today is Caitlin Parody, and she is one of the staffers at a wonderful organization, National Kosh, the National Council for Occupational Safety and Health. The website is nationalkosh.org. We'll continue with her right after this.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the International Federation of Professional and Technical Engineers. You can find more at ifpte.org.
America's Workforce appreciates our sponsor, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, who represents more than 18,000 workers from 19 affiliated local unions and district councils.
Founded in 1887, the Brotherhood of Maintenance of Way Employees Division of the International Brotherhood of Teamsters represents the employees responsible for tirelessly constructing and maintaining the national rail system in America. For more than a century, the Brotherhood of Maintenance of Way Employees has proven they have what it takes to protect its members and meet the ever-changing challenges of the rail industry. Today, the BMWED continues to fight for job security, fair wages, better benefits, and safer, more modern work environments. For more information, please visit BMWE.org. America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Heat and Frost Insulators Labor Management Cooperative Trust. Find out more at insulators.org/LMCT.
Union members need to be heard. Reliable and convenient union voting has never been more important than it is now. Make voting easy for your membership by working with survey and ballot systems. SBS offers encrypted and monitored solutions that ensure your elections are accurate and accessible for every member through mail-in, online, and in-person voting. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com and take the next step in getting secure and auditable elections.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Iron Workers. You can find more at ironworkers.org.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And remember, you can check us out on at least five platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Pandora. And when you get an opportunity, just sign up and receive our shows on a regular basis and give us a rating. We always appreciate those five-star ratings, so please keep them coming. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the Ohio Federation of Teachers, oh.aft.org. Let's go back to Phoenix, Arizona. Joining us on our live line today is Caitlin Parody, who is a staffer with the National Council for Occupational Safety and Health. Again, the national website is nationalcosh.org. And we're talking about a new city ordinance that was recently passed to protect workers for the city of Phoenix contractors from the dangers of extreme heat. We touched on that because, well, today it's 94 degrees, but listen to this. Phoenix experienced a record-breaking 31 straight days with temperatures over 110 degrees last year. The Maricopa County Health Department reported 340 heat-related deaths in the city. This was last year, among 645 fatalities countywide. Three out of four heat-related deaths took place outdoors, and the county does not provide data about how many fatalities were actually work-related. Okay, let's start right there, if you don't mind, Kate, because you talked about in the last segment that there needs to be more done, okay? This was a critical first step. Are they going to start looking at the data here to say, okay, heat caused this death? It was due to the job. Is that perhaps going to start in the city of Phoenix with the city contractors now as a result of this?
You know, I have no indication that that is going to start, but I would say that I would love to see the county surveillance really start to take into account the workplace-related dimensions of some of these heat deaths. Of course, you know, that data is somewhat tracked through the CFOI at the national level. We haven't always had access to that information in Arizona in recent years. And we also know it's often an undercount, right? Because a lot of things that, you know, people may collapse from heat not actively on the job, when they go home, it might not get reported that way. So we would love to see more, you know, more attention being paid to this problem, so that it's not sort of just invisible in the data.
I know the AFL-CIO, and I like to touch on this briefly. I know Workers' Memorial Day is right around the corner, and that's the time that the Labor Federation comes out with their fatality report, you know, what happens with workers on the, how many die each and every day on the job. Now, that number has gone down over the years, but it's, you know, one death is too much, let's be honest. One death is too much, and on any given day, last year, I think it was about 15 people died. They went to work in the morning, they didn't come home at the end of the day. And sadly, getting back to the data, this is the part that's probably very troublesome for a lot of people. The people that are working out in a field, you mentioned landscapers, they're not covered under this ordinance, but airport workers, we do understand they're going to be involved in this. Many of them are black, brown, low-income workers, Latinos. And I'm reading some data here. Latinos are three times more likely to die from heat stress than their peers. Now, why is this happening? I know this is speculation at this point, but what's troublesome in all this, it's like, well, we don't care about that population. I mean, think about so many years ago, before unions in America, there was this attitude that a lot of people, especially immigrants, were expendable. If they died on the job, well, there's somebody else to fill in for them. Can you add to that? What do we know about this right now, Kate?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, I think what you see in that statistic, that Latinos are three times more likely to die of heat on the job than non-Latinos, is just, it's a blatant disregard for human life. And it's also really the story of how you know, occupational segregation works in the United States, right? We know that Black workers, brown workers, immigrant workers, poor workers are being steered into the dirtiest and most dangerous jobs. And, you know, we also know that immigrant workers, Black workers, they are much more likely to face retaliation when they speak up about their rights, right? They're working, they're facing the highest levels of oppression on the job site, the highest power disparities between them and the bosses. So, you know, you see that in reflected in the really disproportionate Latino death rates. And then I think when you really drill down, there's research that we rely on from Public Citizen that shows that, you know, heat-related deaths are, for instance, 91% higher for Mexican-born construction workers than the average for all other construction workers, and 51% higher for, you know, U.S.-born Black construction workers than the average for all other construction workers. So, I mean, it's hard to overstate how profound these disparities are.
We should do a shout-out here. I heard you mention SEIU. And I'm seeing here, Unite Here. So, in other words, it took various unions, and maybe you could speak to that, and the community, in order to, you want positive change, you want to help workers out. You know, it takes a lot, let's be honest here, and I know you worked with these folks. Can you speak to that on the coalitions you were able to build in order for this to happen?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think, you know, like I said, Unite Here has been doing this work for a long time here in Phoenix. SEIU has been lifting up this heat issue for their members or for folks who they're supporting out at the airport, but also for others. You know, last summer when the leaders with SEIU held a press conference out in front of the airport, we had farm workers drive several hours from Yuma to come support the airport workers and their fight for heat protections, which was just a profound act of solidarity, right? And I think shows that there's some really sort of special relationships being built here in Arizona. And, you know, we came together pretty quickly around this ordinance. It was like a quick opportunity and folks just really joined forces to seize it. Obviously, airport workers at the core of that, but you had other folks involved from the iron workers, UFCW elsewhere. And, you know, you also had asked me, the city union really standing in support of this, despite the fact that city employees themselves were not included in it, which is something that we do hope will change in the future.
That's crazy. All right, a couple more things. I don't want to hold you up. I know you're really busy there making positive change over in Phoenix, Arizona. Two events. We've got Workers' Memorial Day coming up, which is the day that OSHA started. Back in 1970. It's a day to commemorate the workers that died on the job, that went to work in the morning, didn't come home for various reasons. Maybe you could talk, and I know National Kosh does a great job with the Dirty Dozen employers. I don't know if you're involved in that, but the other part of this question, I'm reading about National Kosh's Fired Up Workers for Heat Justice, a summer of action. If you don't mind, start with the Workers' Memorial Day to the Dirty Dozen, and maybe you can work your way up to what's going to happen this summer.
That's right. So Workers' Memorial Week is really sort of precious for our network. You know, it's an opportunity for people to mourn for everyone we've lost, and, of course, to really fight like hell for the living, as they say. So we will be doing that in part by releasing our annual Dirty Dozen report that, you know, kind of puts the pressure on employers who are just you know, forcing people to labor under super hazardous conditions. So that will be on Thursday, April 25th at 2 p.m. Eastern. We'll have a big press event that's also open to the public. We'd love to see folks there. You can RSVP on our website. And we're going to, you know, be energized to get out there and support workers as they really fight for their, you know, their health and their safety and their power as we head into this heat season. We'll pivot from Workers' Memorial Week to on May 14th. We are partnering with UCLA Loesch to offer a heat training for workers, a heat teach-in. We're going to be giving people the basics on heat prevention, how to file an effective OSHA complaint about heat, and then, yes, kind of soft launching that national summer of action, Fired Up Workers for Heat Justice, where we just want to see workers really getting the information they need, putting pressure on their employers around heat, and putting pressure on OSHA to really hold employers accountable for heat. So we'd also love to have folks join us on May 14th, and that is also up on our website.
Okay. Again, the website is nationalkosh.org, nationalkosh.org. You know, it takes a community, and you got to get really, really vocal, and it sounds like you did that, especially in the city of Phoenix, to get this ordinance going. A critical first step, as they call it, helping a lot of people dealing with the heat in Arizona. And I'll tell you, they expect a very, very hot summer once again in Arizona. Again, the website, nationalkosh.org. You could also check them out on Facebook, National Kosh. Caitlin, great job. Thank you so much. You got a friend here in America's workforce. Feel free to text me. I'll send you my cell phone after this, and we'll get it on the show. Okay, how's that sound?
That's awesome. Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, the labor reporter at the Huffington Post, Dave Jamieson, will be joining us about what they have decided to do in Florida with regard to heat exposure. Back in a few minutes.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
We're the nurses, firefighters, and claims representatives that help keep our government services running. We respond to natural disasters. We care for our nation's veterans. And we investigate discrimination in the workplace. We are federal and D.C. government workers. And we are proud to serve the American people. Working in more than 70 agencies across the government, we know we can fulfill our mission because our union has our back. Learn more at AFGE.org. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees, AFL-CIO. This segment of the show is brought to you by the Brotherhood of Maintenance of Way Employees Division of the International Brotherhood of Teamsters. For more information, please visit BMWE.org.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining, atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America. You can find more at cwa-union.org.
This segment of America's Workforce is brought to you by Survey and Ballot Systems. SBS has been providing unions with secure and flexible election options for over 30 years. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
This portion of the show brought to you by the International Union of Bricklayers and Allied Craft Workers. For more information, please visit bacweb.org. America's Workforce is presented by the Laborers International Union of North America. Feel the power right now at liuna.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on X, formerly known as Twitter. That would be AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the United Labor Agency, where you could find more at ulagency.org. Well, there's good news and bad news when it comes to heat exhaustion. We just got off the phone with Kate Paraday of National Kosh, the National Council of Occupational Safety and Health, and what they're doing in Phoenix, Arizona. Well, that's just Phoenix, Arizona, and it's only for city contractors. You go to the state of Florida, well, it's a different story. Joining us on a live line right now is Dave Jamieson, labor reporter for the Huffington Post, or better known as the Huff Post. And apparently, Ron DeSantis, who tried to run for president, has signed a bill barring Florida localities from requiring employers to provide outdoor workers with access to water, to rest, and shade. And a lot of people are very upset about this. They say the new law will kill people. And yes, people have died from heat exhaustion. Dave, welcome back to America's Workforce, and thanks for covering this story. It's important. You know how hot it was last year. And I mean, climate change, let's be honest, there's weird things going on, and it's real. It's real. But apparently some people have their, I guess they have their head in the sand on this one, and Ron DeSantis is one of them, along with the legislature there. So talk to me about this law and why it's happening. It's all yours, buddy. Go ahead.
Hey, Flash. Yeah, so this law was basically a response to something that was going on in Miami-Dade County, where the county commission was crafting, you know, some heat safety regulations, basically just a requirement that you sort of have a heat safety program in place and you know, maybe provide water and breaks on particularly hot days where the temperature hits a certain mark. And so in the Capitol, they decided they wanted to block this, and not just block it in Miami-Dade County, but block any locality in the state, city or county, from doing this. And so they crafted what's called a preemption law. It's something that blocks local jurisdictions from doing something. And it had the support of the construction and agricultural industries. Not surprising, there's powerful lobbies in the state of Florida with a lot of outdoor workers who labor out in the heat. And so this bill, it passed basically along party lines. Republicans were behind this bill. Democrats opposed it. It made it through both chambers earlier this year, and DeSantis very quietly signed it last Thursday. There was a lot of pressure to veto it. A lot of labor groups were very upset about it, understandably. I talked to a bunch of workers about it, including a utility technician who she felt like people were going to die because of this. So people were upset, but DeSantis signed it anyway, and I couldn't find... Usually they put out a press release when he signed something. I could not find a release for him signing this, but it was recorded in the on the legislative website. So that's how I was able to confirm that he signed it. But it's a big deal. We're going to see more of it, I think, in Republican-led states where they want to block cities and counties from taking the heat issue into their own hands. And you know, they only tried to do this in Miami-Dade County because there are no federal regulations on heat. There is no OSHA standard on heat, and there is no state one on heat either in Florida. And so you had a lot of Republicans saying, "Oh, we don't want a patchwork regulation. You know, we want something consistent." Well, there is no consistent law, and they haven't made any movement towards putting one in place.
And this is pretty much mirrored after what they did in Texas. In Texas, they call the legislation the Death Star Bill. I saw that in your article. And it is funny, too, because I talked to Len Aguilar. This was some months back. And he's the Secretary Treasurer of the Texas AFL-CIO. And he said, and to your point, they want to be uniform. They don't want one city saying, oh, well, you can take a break. And then the other city, you can't take a break. So Len said they went to the Texas legislature and they said, okay, then let them all take a break. You know, 10 minutes, get a glass of water, and just, you know, rest for a little bit. But they didn't want to go down that road. They figured, well, forget that. We're just going to let the workers work through the heat and so be it. And sadly, I was reading in your article, what was it, last July, a farm worker in Miami-Dade, and that's probably what started this ordinance, that he died during...
It certainly galvanized things. Yeah, a worker in South Florida died in July, and that actually, I believe, turned out to be the hottest month on record on Earth. You know, it was just a brutal month down in South Florida. Where I think there was like 30 consecutive days of a heat index of 100 or something like that. And a farm worker passed away. His family said he'd been showing, you know, signs of heat stress. And you know, it's not surprising. This kind of thing, deaths from heat stress happens regularly. I did a story a couple years ago about how this happens with postal workers. I mean, this happens. We probably tend to think of farm workers when we think of heat stress, but really, it's anybody outside, and lots of jobs inside too. I mean, think about warehouses. How hot they get. It's a major issue for warehouse workers, delivery workers, postal workers, UPS drivers. They're finally getting air conditioning in those trucks, but for many years these workers have been doing their deliveries without AC in a lot of these vehicles, and so the heat is a real problem. And in Texas, that law, the Death Star bill, it was actually quite a good bit broader. I mean, it really preempted so many local ordinances related to labor or housing or all kinds of things. This one in Florida was targeted more at blocking the heat, but there was also a separate provision in there blocking local jurisdictions from requiring living wages on government-funded projects. And that was aimed at cities or counties that wanted to mandate certain wages when construction projects that have tax dollars attached to them, and the Republicans didn't like that either. So they blocked all of that. And this is like, it's the whole preemption thing. We've seen it with minimum wages, over the years. We've seen it with paid sick days. It's a funny thing where these are usually Republicans who talk a lot about keeping the government out of your business. And yet these are laws that come out of that they craft in state capitals telling local jurisdictions what they can or can't do. And they upset people because there's a feeling that this is very undemocratic, and that it's a case of lawmakers who say Washington is always butting into their business. Well, here they are, butting into the business of local cities and counties that want to do their own thing.
And all they're trying to do is keep people alive. I mean, it's pretty simple. Pretty simple what's going on here.
The Miami-Dade ordinance, there was nothing. It was sort of in flux a bit. The original proposal had been watered down, but there was nothing crazy in this thing, and really nothing that frankly looked very expensive. And one thing that the preemption bill did, it if you even wanted to have a local ordinance saying that an employer simply had to hang up a sign saying, "Here's what we do in the event of very hot days," you couldn't do that. The legislation even blocked that. So it was rather extreme in its restrictions. I mean, you basically, no city or county could really do anything related to workplace heat because of this.
Well, wait a minute here. Stop here, Dave. You mean, okay, so what if there's a good employer say, okay, you know what? You can, if you're working on this job, you get overheated, you can take a break. Will that employer get penalized under this new law?
No, that you can do. What you can't do is, as a city or county, say anything so slight as we want employers to hang up signs saying, be mindful on hot days and make sure you drink a lot of water. That you can't do. This is not blocking employers from doing anything. It's blocking local governments from asking or having employers do something. That's really what this was.
Oh my gosh. This all starts July 1 when the law takes effect. And you mentioned the minimum wage situation that starts at the end of September, but not until 2026, where localities in Florida may not maintain minimum wages above the state level. And I see under a 2020 ballot measure, the statewide minimum wage will rise to $13 per hour in September, and then it'll be $15 per hour by 2026, which is still below when you factor in inflation and all that. That's still pretty low. And thanks for joining us here, Dave. One more thing. I know you're really busy. Didn't they relax child labor laws in Florida as well? I mean, so more young people can go to work, and in some cases at dangerous jobs. Haven't they done that too?
I'm not sure if it's passed in Florida. There are a number of states, generally Republican-led ones, that are trying to relax the child labor rules right now, basically because of the tight labor market, and they want to they want more kids available for work.
Yeah. A number of states are doing that right now, and I know Florida's done a really good job targeting public sector unions, especially the teachers, but that's another story. I'm going to let you go. Thank you so much for coming to the table today. Labor reporter Dave Jamieson of the Huffington Post, better known as the Huff Post. I keep saying Huffington Post, but I know it's a Huff Post. You take care. I tell you, you're doing a great job. Keep it going, okay, brother?
Thanks, Lashie. Take care.
And that'll be it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up tomorrow, the latest from the American Legion and the Alliance for Retired Americans. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.